It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we are streaming live on YouTube, if you like, as well at the Team 980. We go around the NFL at 5:30, but right now it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Joining us today to talk about Commanders and Giants is Ryan Dunleavy of the New York Post. Ryan, what's up, man? How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing quite well. Of course, looking forward to Sunday. And I'm curious, like, on the Daniel Jones front, a couple of different things. First of all, has the talk in New York this week been remotely about Jones's history, either with the Commanders or against Dan Quinn? And if so, is it one versus the other? Because he's 5-1-1 against the Commanders, but has struggled, including the one of the worst games of his career, the Sunday night opener last year, last time he faced a Dan Quinn-led defense.
Yes. The answer to your question is both. There's been a lot of talk about both. Like, the narrative around Daniel Jones, obviously, is how much longer he can hold his grip on the starting quarterback job here. Everybody saw publicly on Hard Knocks that the Giants were interested in replacing him. They did not. There's an injury guarantee in his contract that suggests if he doesn't play well soon, they're going to have a Russell Wilson situation on their hand. So it's a ticking clock, and the idea is if you're playing for your job, the team you want to play is the Washington Commanders, who you're 5-1-1 against. He only has 22 wins in his career. Five of them are against Washington. He only has 62 touchdown passes in his career. 10 are against Washington. It's the one team he's figured out. And then, to your point, they now have this ain't Ron Rivera's Washington team. This is Dan Quinn's Washington team, and Dan Quinn has had Daniel Jones's number. I think he has 15 sacks in four games against Daniel Jones. They're 0-4, Daniel Jones was, but the real caveat there, guys, is Dan Quinn doesn't have the Cowboys personnel. So it's Jones versus Quinn, Jones versus the Commanders, but it's really Jones versus the Commanders' personnel, and I think the Commanders' personnel is more friendly to Jones than the Cowboys' personnel ever was.
Yeah, certainly not having Micah Parsons makes it much friendlier, not to mention some of the other talented guys down there in Dallas that Dan could not bring with him to D.C. What has been, like, if there is a theme against the Cowboys in those Daniel Jones versus Dan Quinn matchups, is it individual dominance and brilliance by a guy like Parsons, or has it been more, you know, an inability to schematically figure out what's going on and, like, make good decisions, read defenses, figure out where pressure is coming from, those types of more coach adjacent things from Daniel Jones?
Good question. It's been the common theme has been that he's running for his life. And so whether that is the coach creating the pressure or Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence, who's a Giants tormentor over the years, getting pressure, whether it's the fact that Evan Neal was at right tackle for the last 2 years and is not anymore because he lost the job. Daniel Jones has been running for his life against the Cowboys. The Cowboys always get up big on the Giants, so then they're forced to play the drop back pass game, and that doesn't work well. The Giants Commanders games are obviously usually much closer, and you can have a more balanced offensive game plan. So the one thing more than anything is that Dan Quinn's aggressive defense has had Daniel Jones running for his life. And the Giants have upgraded their offensive line, certainly with the Cowboys and by extension Dan Quinn in mind, because those games just got out of hand because the Giants offensive line just couldn't do it.
You mentioned the injury guarantee. Ryan Dunleavy, Giants reporter for the New York Post, is with us here on the Hoffman Show for Not My Beat today. You mentioned the injury guarantee, and you mentioned, you know, the what we all saw on Hard Knocks, and at times kind of the push and pull between Joe Shane and obviously the team president. Like, what kind of power does each have here? I guess really the crux of the question, Ryan, would be, like, do you think Joe Shane will actually be able to override the very few people in that Giants organization that are above him up to the ownership level to tell Brian Daboll, if it comes to it, hey, Daniel Jones is not playing anymore because we can't risk him getting hurt because we are moving on after this season?
I don't think he has to tell Brian Daboll. I mean, I think they're lockstep on everything. I mean, they came here together. They came from Buffalo together. If Joe Shane's thinking he wants to pull the plug, then Brian Daboll is thinking it, and vice versa. So they share a brain on football decisions. So about telling the upper hand, look, I think we saw on Hard Knocks that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll have complete football control of this organization, for better or worse. And, you know, John Mara wanted Saquon Barkley back, and Saquon Barkley just scored 3 touchdowns for the Eagles in week one. So John Mara shares his opinion. He is not the typical football owner who was a billionaire somewhere else and bought a football team. He is a football guy through and through. It's what he grew up in. It's the family business. So he has educated scouting personnel opinions, but he does defer to his leadership. So I do think he'd let it be known what he thinks. But in the end, it'll be Shane and Daboll's decision on when to pull it. But let's call what it is, guys. I mean, the Giants are hoping to be 2-0. They're staring at 0-2. And then the next 5 games are a brutal gauntlet. So this is a must-win game for the Giants. If not, they're looking at, you know, Cleveland, then Dallas, then put it this way, the next 5 games are all against teams that you could expect to be in the playoffs at the end of the year. So if they don't win this game, they could be 0-7, 0-8 real quick.
Oof, that is not ideal. Then again, that is the nature of being a bad team in the NFL. Your losses tend to stack up quickly, and the Giants certainly look that part so far. Last Daniel Jones question for you, Ryan, would be this. Like, 100% of Daniel Jones is only so good, but he's also coming off the ACL. What percent of Daniel Jones do you think we saw in week one, and realistically, is that the percent we should expect to see in week two?
That's a good question. I don't know how I could put a percentage on it. I would say this, like, physically he's fine. Like, I watched him in training camp 90% of the time. I know what he looks like at his best. I think physically he's fine. Maybe he doesn't have some of the same running explosion, which is a big deal to him because that's what keeps defenses honest. That's a big part of his game. People don't always think that because, you know, there's a famous clip of him stumbling or whatever, and because he might not look like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but running is a big part of Daniel Jones's game. It's a strength. And a defensive coach told me this week he doesn't quite look like he has the same explosion, but physically I feel he's fine. Mentally, it's where he's beat up, and he's nowhere near what he was in 2022. Inside the building, they'll tell you he hasn't lost any confidence. Anybody of his former teammates, Kyle Rudolph, Golden Tate, or any quarterback who's played the position and is now a media analyst will tell you he's exhibiting all the signs of a quarterback who doesn't have any confidence. He's rushing his throws. He's abandoning the pocket. He's not trusting what he sees. So mentally, he's far off from where he's been at his best. But physically, I think he's okay.
Yeah, you can definitely see it on tape when you watch him. He's a little late. He's a little off. His throws are unsure. With that, like, from a supporting cast standpoint, Malik Nabers obviously comes in. We saw at LSU what he could do. Obviously, a lot of us that watched a lot of Jaden Daniels tape saw the ball leave Jaden's hand and land in Malik Nabers. We saw how much it meant to Shane and them via Hard Knocks to get him. Is there anyone else, though, that really can move the needle for this Giants offense with Barkley having departed to Philly, as is well documented and mentioned? But is there anyone else that, if you're game planning against this Giants offense, that you think Joey Jr. and Dan Quinn are really circling?
I mean, they should be familiar with Darius Slayton. He's led the Giants in receiving yards for 4 of the last 5 years. He's coming out of the concussion protocol. He's a big play threat. He's Daniel's most comfortable target. He's not by any world a game breaker or whatnot, that, you know, in the world of elite, but he's a consistent receiver who would be pushing 1,000 yards and better offenses over the last 4 or 5 years. He's just as steady as they come. And then Wandale Robinson had 12 targets for the Giants in week one. They use him essentially as an extension of the running game. Everything's like within a 5-yard cushion, try to get him and scheme him into space and let him get yards after the catch. But no, there's not anybody on the Darren Waller, Saquon Barkley level, two guys who were here last year and are gone, who other than Malik Nabers.
Ryan Dunleavy, New York Post, with us here on the Hoffman Show, previewing the Washington Commanders game against the New York Giants on Sunday. On the other side of the ball, Kayvon Thibodeau is kind of the Daniel Jones of the Giants defense in that he hasn't been particularly good against anybody else, not like third stringers or the Washington Commanders. How has he looked so far through camp with Brian Burns on the other side and this new Shane Bowen defense, and how much is he looking forward to seeing colors that he has thrived against on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I haven't quite made that. But, yeah, he had that memorable game in 2022, which is probably the most dominant game I've seen a Giants player have on the defensive side in like a decade. He had like 12 sacks, a strip sack for excuse me, 12 tackles, strip sack fumble for a touchdown, and then he stopped a touchdown at like the 1 yard line. And I think Washington didn't score on the drive. So, yeah, he certainly had Washington's number too. I wouldn't say quite that he hasn't had success against anybody else. He did have an 11.5 sack season last year, but he had a very quiet opener and he didn't respond well to having a very quiet opener when asked about it. There's the Giants defense is the opposite of the Giants defense last 2 years. Under Wink Martindale, blitz heavy, pressure, aggressive man coverage. This is more zone coverage and rely on your front four to get after the quarterback. Your best players have to play well is how Bowen put it, and Thibodeau, and you have to play well where your resources are, he said. And Thibodeau is the former number five pick in the draft. Brian Burns has a $30 million a year contract. So they need those two players to dominate Washington's journeyman offensive tackles.
Yeah, or a third-round rookie who is going to rotate in there as well, and Brandon Coleman. Either way, when you put it that way, that seems like advantage New York. I know that there has been a bunch of injuries that you've been following, obviously, all week. The Malik Nabers thing seems like it was nothing more than, you know, a brief thing. He's not even on the injury report by Friday. But what's the status of Micah McFadden, and how important is he to that Giants defense?
Yeah, I mean, Nabers isn't on the injury report because he's going to play. And he was a full participant in practice. But he limped around a little bit at practice today. I mean, they need him, so he's going to play, and one of his things is durability. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's not at full strength. And then Micah McFadden is important when they're in a base defense. Like, the Giants will probably play a lot. It depends on the personnel they're going against, but they're very comfortable to sit nickel and dime, in which case McFadden wouldn't be on the field. Isaiah Simmons, a big linebacker hybrid defensive back who didn't play any snaps against the Vikings, could be on the field in that spot. But if they're in their base defense, he's their second best inside linebacker. He's a good run stopping player with experience, played 700 plus snaps last year. He's somebody they're very comfortable with on the field. Not like a game changing player, but doesn't miss tackles. He's just a steady guy out there. And so, yeah, he's off the injury report. He's going to play. He did not play week one. He was like a break glass in case of emergency guy. So they are getting him back.
All right, last thing for Ryan Dunleavy of New York Post with us here on the Hoffman Show. I think both fan bases, Ryan, are looking at the opponent and going, this is a get right game. Do you have a particularly strong feeling either way that one of the two fan bases here is actually correct on that, that there is any distinct advantage, or are we looking at two teams, maybe one that's heading towards a rebuild and one that's just started one, that are going to play a football game on Sunday and whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, I'll probably end up picking the Giants because, like you said, they tend to have the Commanders' number, and I certainly think they're the more desperate team because Washington has some leeway starting a rebuild, and the Giants are trying to deny that they're in a rebuild. So they're certainly the more desperate team, but I would be very surprised if it's not the typical NFL fourth quarter one score game, probably low scoring. The Commanders have the quarterback who could break loose and, you know, run for a couple touchdowns. And I would say he's certainly the quarterback who's trending up in this game. The Giants' best chance to win the game is probably if their pass rush wreaks havoc on the offensive line of the Commanders. But Giants aren't going to win a score fest if Washington hits a couple big plays with Daniels or Robinson or Terry McLaurin, who Deontay Banks shut down pretty much twice last year as a rookie. So defense would be the path to the Giants winning the game. I think it'll probably be two pretty desperate teams and a one-score game in the fourth quarter, but I don't see a very obvious advantage either way.
It is funny you say that Banks shut McLaren down because statistically, yes, I do feel like Terry very much feels like if I ever get a quarterback, I'm going to destroy you, because some of the tape I don't think was as kind to Banks in terms of Terry beat him on a bunch of stuff and the quarterback play was abysmal. So that is definitely my, kind of my the matchup I'm circling for potential fireworks on Sunday is the Banks-McLaren matchup. So it should be a lot of fun. Ryan, appreciate your time here on the radio and probably see you in the press box on Sunday. Thanks, dude.
It sounds good. Thanks for having me.
That is Ryan Dunleavy, everybody. If you want more on the Giants side of things, you can read his work in the sports section of the New York Post. When we get back, a few more thoughts on this game before we focus our eyes on the rest of the NFL. We go around it, picks and analysis coming up at 5:30.